This is Crime Binge.
Welcome back to Crime Binge,
the podcast
where we are on episode 61 with Richard Ramirez,
who he's whack.
He is whack. And truthfully, when Sarah was like, let's come back with a big hitter, let's do Richard Ramirez, I was like, ugh, I hate Richard, honestly.
He's my favorite.
I think he's the worst, and he's still the worst, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But after reading the book about him, his life is insane, and I'm just so confused as to why it existed. But that sounded really mean. I don't mean
if he didn't exist, yeah, a lot of people would be alive.
That's fair. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've been gone for 2 months.
Exactly.
We've been MIA. How have you been in the meantime, Sarah?
I've been pretty good. Me and my fiance started planning our wedding.
Nice.
We picked a date. We're looking at venues and stuff. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
And honestly, other than that, not a whole lot.
That's fair. That's
I've
fair.
I've been racking up my binges for the podcast.
Yes, I have too.
And just I've been so excited to be able to go out to eat again and stuff.
Yeah.
So I've been doing that a lot.
I don't. I'm too scared to do that still.
I'm too much of a fat ass.
I almost never leave my house still. but yeah, that's great.
How was your break?
The reason we're on the break is because of me. I had a bit of a mental break.
That's okay.
But that's okay. You know, when you have people who you work with listening to the podcast, you don't always want to talk about the mental health stuff.
That's true.
But yeah, it was just super stressful to work in the pandemic and also produce the podcast that we were doing together. So I needed a little bit of a break.
Yeah, there was a lot going on.
Yeah.
And we had a lot that we were trying to work on behind the scenes as well.
Yeah, exactly. And we were both just not unhappy, just complacent with where we were in our podcast. So we wanted to make it the best it could be,
exactly.
You know? So we're back, hopefully better than ever.
Mm-hmm. Your mom came down.
My mom did come to visit. We also didn't do a whole heck of a lot because she was also too afraid. But
That's
it was
okay.
Really nice to see her because I only get to see her about once a year. Didn't think it was going to happen, but it was good. Nobody got COVID. 10 out of 10.
Exactly.
And we know we're talking a lot, but it's been 2 months, so you guys are going to have to just deal with it, unfortunately.
Yeah, honestly, Morgan and I also haven't been seeing each other as much.
It's true.
And so we just have 2 months to catch up on with each other as well.
Exactly, just 2 months. Because here's the thing, we do message each other all day at work.
Yeah.
But we're not talking to each other.
We're just wow, this work thing was shitty.
Yeah, so it's a lot different, you know? But it'll be good. It'll be a good way for us to hang out every week.
Again. Yeah.
Again. Would you like to tell us your binge? I know you've done a lot over this 2 month period, but
I did choose one for today.
Okay, cool.
Because I listened to it today.
Yeah.
And it's a podcast, and we all know that I love the Morbid podcast.
Yeah.
Which you started listening to, and I'm so excited about.
I did. I do thoroughly enjoy it. They're both very funny. It's very good.
I'm glad.
They produce so much content.
Oh my God, I know.
I was kind of feeling bad about myself over the 2 month break.
Oh, no.
Because I was they post several times a week, and that's insane. But I think it's their full time job.
Yeah.
So I think it's different.
They both do some stuff part time.
Yeah.
And I think they're going back to just doing two a week.
Yeah.
Which is, I feel a normal schedule.
That's a reasonable
they were pumping out
amount.
A lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyways.
Sorry.
You're good.
Tangent already.
The girls, Elena and Ash from Morbid, have teamed up with Parcast and started a new podcast called Crime Countdown.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. They have 10 episodes out right now, and they started in July. And so basically there's just like a category, like the one that I listened to today was like daytime murders. They've done like murderous moms and bank heists and whatever. And then each of them has like the top 10 of that category. And then they each have five. They go back and forth. They don't know like what the other one has. And they just do like a little synopsis. They do like maybe a 5 to 10 minute thing about each one. So it's not like super long.
Yeah.
But there's a ton of stuff that I've never heard of on there. Like I've usually heard of like the top two or three.
Yeah.
Because they're like the big cases. But there's a lot of interesting stuff.
Nice.
And they do this thing where the podcast researchers, they actually do all of the work for them and they just host the podcast. And so they try and like beat out the podcast researchers and they're like, well, you missed this one or this one.
So it's funny.
It's also funny. Like, and they're the exact same as they are on Morbid. Like they have such a good time doing it.
Right.
And I think it's a really fun show.
Nice. Yeah. I haven't given that one a check out yet, but I will.
Good.
Yeah.
What's your binge this week?
Sorry, I was like, I'm just going to say it. My binge would have to be, because over the 2 month break, what I did do is read. I read like 4 books.
Hell yeah. Well, that was your one of your New Year's resolutions.
Yeah. And I finally got the time to do so, which was great. And someone who I had read in college, her name is Octavia Butler.
Okay.
She, I don't know why I'm acting like she's not well known. She's a very well known author.
I don't know her, but I don't read.
I read Parable of the Sower in college, and it's like a science fiction book. That one is specifically like a dystopian. And I read one over break called The Seed. And it's about like two gods, basically, whose lives are like intertwined throughout the whole course of like the earth, basically.
Okay.
And they're both like living as humans on earth and they like come into each other's lives and leave. And it was really, really good. I love it. She's an amazing author. And I'm going to read a ton more of her stuff because I love science fiction and dystopian type literature. And that's what I'm here for, basically.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what I would be into if I did read.
Yeah.
I just can't, like, every time I sit down and read, it lasts like 30 minutes and then it doesn't happen again for another year.
Yeah. That's fair. It's not everyone's bag, you know? You got to find also, like, the book that's going to keep your attention, you know?
Very true. There was one book that I used to start reading every summer in high school, and I never got through like half of it. And I don't remember who it's by, but it was called Prozac Nation, and it was about this depressed girl and mental health and everything. And I just, like, that was the one book that I wanted to read, and I always tried to read it, and something always came up, and I never finished
You should try and, like, do an audiobook or something, because it's that like a podcast, if they have the right author.
Yeah.
Or not author, right narrator. Wow. We are already on a tangent, my friend. all right, guys. We have just one last little bit to get through before we get into today's case, which, by the way, is going to be a multi-parter. It's a long one. Once we started getting into the research and the nitty-gritty, there was just so much we wanted to tell you about. So
there is.
That's, it's going to be a long one. Sorry. Hashtag not sorry. Ew. Right? That was... Please take me out.
We also wanted to say, since we're talking about the episode, that Richard Ramirez is a gruesome episode. And there are graphic parts in it. And we will tell you when there's more graphic parts and we'll give you a little warning.
Yeah.
And also, surprisingly, with how big of a known serial killer Richard Ramirez is, there is a lot of conflicting information on there. And there's like information on if he did or didn't murder certain people, because there's like
multiple serial killers operating at the same time.
Exactly. So basically what we're going to talk about are the ones that we absolutely know that he did and have the most information on and stuff like that.
So if you hear us miss anybody, you can still let us know, but there's a chance that it's just not 100% connected to him.
Exactly.
Legally speaking. Because his name is the Night Stalker, but like the Golden State Killer is the original Night yes. Stalker. So it's just, there's a lot of conflicting stuff there.
There is.
But just a little announcements corner, I guess.
I mean, it's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. We wanted to let you guys know that after over a year of doing this podcast, we finally have a website.
Yes, and it is just crimebinge.com.
Yeah, because fucking look at us go. But we're super excited about it. You can go and explore it if you want to. We're going to have stuff on each episode up there, like our sources and all of that stuff, if you ever want to take a deeper look into the case, which is going to be great.
Yeah, and that was one of the main things that was being worked on during yeah. this break, because we realized that we should have started this
at like, the beginning.
At the beginning, because going through all of the episodes is yeah. what takes so, like, it's just tedious work going through 60 episodes.
It is. That's for sure the biggest part. But we worked hard on it. It's not amazing, but we did use Squarespace, even yeah. though they didn't fucking sponsor us. One thing we are super excited for is that the website is also going to have a submission function.
It'll be so much easier than having to go into your email and email yeah. us. And with the submission function, you can send us suggestions of things you want to hear. You can also send us listener tales there, because yeah. we are wanting to add in a mini-sode of listener tales, because it's like our favorite thing when we listen to all of our other podcasts.
Yeah.
And we also want to build a relationship with you guys. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be the best way to like read your guys' stories as well.
Yeah. It's always super fun getting to hear everybody's like run-ins with a serial killer or even just like a scary person. But this is something we have wanted to do, but it wasn't something we really pushed all that much.
Mm-hmm.
And we've decided that the review mini episodes we were doing no longer really serve us. We don't like them. So we want to do something different, and we want to have a listener episode once a month. And we want you guys to be a part of it and tell us your wild and crazy stories.
Exactly. And we are going to keep our mini-sodes about our, like, current events, yeah. news updates, stuff like that. We're just getting rid of the ones where we, like she said, review, like, documentaries or other things like that.
Yeah.
Movies and stuff. Unless, like, something big and huge comes out that, like,
yeah.
we have to do, you know?
For sure. For sure. But we are excited for those upcoming changes, and we hope that you guys are excited for them as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Should we get into this?
Let's do it. All right. So to just give you a little rundown about Richard Ramirez, if somehow you don't already know who he is. Richard Ramirez was an American serial killer who was active in Los Angeles from 1984 to 1985. He used the guise of Satanism for his random break-ins and murders, lurking around in the night dressed in all black. This, combined with the terror of back-to-back attacks, granted him the name the Night Stalker.
All right.
And we'll also learn he had some other names beforehand, yeah. which were just great.
Are you ready to get on this highway to hell, Sarah?
Let's fucking do it.
So, Ricardo Levia Munez Ramirez was born on February 29th, 1960 in El Paso, Texas.
Which is actually leap day. Is that what it's called? It's leap year, but it's
Leap day. Yeah.
So he only has a birthday every 4 years.
Yep. That's why he's so angry.
Exactly.
He was born to immigrant parents Julian and Mercedes Ramirez, and he was actually the youngest of five children, and his family often called him Richie or Richard. So we're not going to call him Ricardo the whole time.
No.
And he also had three brothers and one sister. Now, these siblings were all born within 5 years of one another, which, whew, four kids in 5 years.
Is that like Irish quadruplets?
Irish quadruplets for sure. But Richie was born 4 years after the other siblings. And Julian and Mercedes, because as we will find out, are super Catholic. They simply thought that since they hadn't had kids in a couple years, that God was done giving them children and that they were not going to have any more. So they were shocked, capital shocked, religious? When they discovered they were having another child.
Religious birth control is like the rhythm method.
The rhythm method like is just, it's silly and it doesn't work.
It just baffles me.
So his father, Julian, was from Mexico, and he was actually a former Juarez policeman. And he eventually, after years, became a laborer on the Santa Fe Railroad. And this is actually when the family moved to Texas. Around this time, I think they're just like a little family of four. Mm-hmm. And his mother was also a laborer in a boot factory. And she worked here while she was pregnant with all of her children. Well, not all of them. She worked here while she was pregnant with her children and was frequently exposed to toxic chemicals and their fumes. And all of his siblings actually had some kind of birth defect, which is very uncommon, I would say.
Yeah, definitely.
And these birth defects range from bone deformities to breathing issues. And the brother who had the most trouble was Joseph. He, like, could barely even walk because his legs were so, like, deformed and stuff.
That's sad.
Yeah. And the older siblings, the older two, I believe, they actually had their defects from what they assume is all of the atomic bomb testing that was going on in Juarez at the time.
Wow.
Because that was the reason they actually moved. There was a lot of children being born with defects in the area, so their family was like, gotta go.
I feel like I heard about that before.
Yeah, I mean, in areas like that, it's bound to happen. It's very, very shitty stuff. And then the younger siblings had defects due to the fumes from the boot factory. And let's see. The doctor actually told Mercedes if she wanted to keep Richie that she would need to quit her job because she was going to lose the baby. So she did so at the end of her 5th month of pregnancy and began working there shortly after giving birth. Because, you know, she had to fucking feed a family.
Exactly.
Like, we're not judging her at all.
Yeah, she did what she had to do.
Yeah. But his father, on the other hand, was a bit of an asshole.
Yeah.
And by a bit of an asshole, I mean he was a fucking asshole. He was known to be, like, prone to fits of anger, and he often physically abused the children. And this actually led to most of his children leaving the house before they even turned 18. As a child, Richie was very close with his sister Ruth, and they would play dress-up together. She preferred Richard over her other brothers because the other brothers teased her and would roughhouse with her because they all had short tempers like their father.
Yeah, and also since Richie was so much younger, like, she would kind of, like, be like, play dress up and he will because he wants to do anything his big sister says.
Exactly.
Me as a child. So, as a child, he also had two very serious head injuries.
And very early on, which is not ideal.
One occurred as young as 2 years old.
Right.
Richie was being watched by a babysitter, and he tried to reach a radio that was on top of his parents' dresser. And when he couldn't reach it, like all little kids, he tries to kind of climb up the dresser.
Yeah.
This is when the dresser falls on top of him, mm-hmm. and it caused a large gash in his head and just started bleeding profusely.
Yeah.
So the babysitter first called his parents and then rushed him to the nearest hospital. And this accident actually caused him to get 30 stitches in his head, and he was also diagnosed with a concussion. And the doctors believe that he had actually been unconscious for 15 minutes.
Which is really bad.
Especially for a 2-year-old.
Yeah. Also, the dad was furious that this occurred, and this babysitter was immediately fired, and they got another one.
Of course.
It's kind of fair.
Yeah.
But he's also a 2-year-old who apparently was already obsessed with music at that young of an age and was pissed he couldn't turn up the radio. So, like, yeah. he's going to do what a 2-year-old's going to do.
So the next injury happened was when Richie was 5 years old. So he goes to the park with his sister, Ruth, and his brother, Robert. Richie then ran up to his sister, who was swinging on the swings, and she was unable to, like, stop fast enough and ends up hitting Richard in the head. And she hit him in the head so hard that he was rendered unconscious. And again, he was taken to the hospital after this.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure there's another one who was hit in the head with a swing. Like, I think it might have been John Wayne Gacy was hit in the head with a swing.
I'm not sure. A lot of them have head injuries, which is not a great connection.
So after these two injuries, he began to suffer from epileptic seizures.
This part angers me so much, and I feel like it has a huge part to deal with why Richard is the way he was.
So the first attack he had was when he was in the fifth grade. His class was taking a math test when he fell out of his chair and began to seize. He went to school the next day and had yet another seizure. At first, the doctor said he was just having grandma seizures and that he would grow out of it, and wasn't given any medication for this either.
Yeah.
He then began having staring spells where he would just stare blankly for, like, upwards of 15 minutes at a time. And it turns out that these were petite mal seizures, and he would have anywhere from 1 to 2 dozen of these a month until his early teens, when they eventually lessened and stopped.
1 to 2 dozen a month.
Wow.
That's a lot of fucking seizures.
It is. That fucks up your brain.
That's what I'm saying. And the doctor's just like, nah. Don't give him any medicine.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Eventually, he was diagnosed with temporal lobe epilepsy. And apparently, a certain number of people who have this experience altered sexuality, hyper-religious feelings, and excessive aggression.
Yeah, so
all things he experienced.
Yeah, he's really just... The building blocks of a serial killer are here for sure.
Oh, 100%. He didn't, like, abuse animals or wet the bed, because I think those are the other two.
Yeah, that we know of.
Yeah.
Truthfully.
That we know of.
Yeah.
That is true.
So, for most serial killers, like, this would be enough for them to lay the blame for their crimes, you know? I'd mean parents. But Richard had another huge influence in his life. And this would be his cousin, Miguel Ramirez, who went by Mike.
Fucking Mike. Jesus Christ.
I think, along with the seizures, was just the perfect recipe to create a serial killer. Because Mike was also a serial killer, if you ask me.
Oh, 100%.
He was just a serial killer of a different kind.
He was a legal serial killer because he was in the army.
Well, it's not even that. It was while he was in the army, he was like murdering people that he probably wasn't supposed to be murdering.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. So Richard began hanging out with his cousin Mike a lot around the age of 12 as a way to escape his abusive father. Miguel was a decorated U.S. Army Green Beret veteran who was in the Vietnam War and often told Richard stories of women who he had raped and murdered while in the war. And even showed photos while they smoked marijuana together.
And a fun fact, Miguel was actually the person, who introduced him to marijuana.
Yeah.
But also, apparently Richard's seizures stopped once he started smoking marijuana.
Yeah, because it's medicine.
Exactly.
So, Miguel / Mike, the family, like, solely calls him Mike, which is strange to me. But he would go into details about the torture that he had inflicted upon people and even showed Richard, mind you, a 12-year-old boy, Polaroids that he had taken of Vietnamese women that he had raped. And he even had a photo where he was posing with a woman's severed head, which, like, is disgusting.
Yes, I heard in one of the other like podcast books, all the things we research, that like the photos there of this woman's head, severed head, like he showed photos of him raping the same woman first.
Yeah.
And then it was like, it was the severed same head. Woman. Yeah. Yes.
It, yeah, that's what I think they said that in the book as well. And yeah, it's very fucked up stuff. And Mike would also describe how amazing and powerful he felt while killing and torturing these people. So this is obviously something that would really help merge together Richard's thoughts on sex and violence.
Yeah.
So Miguel was clearly unstable.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously. And this would be proven further on May 4th, 1973. Richie was over at Mike's house. They were smoking weed and playing pool, you know, the huge.
Yeah.
Richard says that he went to the fridge, and while he went to the fridge, he supposedly saw a gun inside of the fridge. And when he asked Miguel about it, he responded, "I may be using it and I want it to be cool," which is just the lamest shit I've ever heard in my life. When Miguel's wife, Jessie, came home, she began an argument with him over not having a job. And this was like a very typical argument in their household. It was a daily argument.
I mean, obviously she's working and he's not. Yeah. I would have this argument as well.
Yeah, because they also do have two children together. So this is when Mike calmly grabbed his gun and fatally shot his wife point blank with a .38 caliber revolver in front of 13-year-old Richard and their two children. Miguel told Richard to go home and not tell anybody what happened, and he did exactly that. He was later described by his family as sullen and withdrawn after this happened, and apparently, once he got home, his parents got a call about the murder and were like, "Richie, what happened?" And he was like, "I don't know. I wasn't there." Like, he just immediately was like, "This guy is crazy. He's going to kill me, probably."
Yeah, I bet.
I don't know. That's totally my interpretation. I just added that, but who knows? So in the days following the murder, Richard and his father actually returned to the apartment to retrieve some jewelry for Mike, I'm sure so he could pay off his bond or something. The puddle of blood remained on the floor of the apartment. Richard later recounted, "That day I went back to that apartment, it was like some kind of mystical experience. It was all quiet and still and hot in there. You could smell the dried blood. Particles of dust just seemed to hover in the air. I looked at the place where Jessie had fallen and died, and I got this kind of tingly feeling. It was the strangest thing. Then my father told me to look into her pocketbook for this jewelry my cousin wanted, and I dumped Jessie's pocketbook on the bed and looked through her things. It gave me the weirdest feeling. I mean, I knew her, and these were her things, and she was dead. Murdered, gone. And I was touching her things. It made me feel in contact with her," which is an uncomfy way to describe it, but I guess also a good way to describe it at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, being 13 years old, like, this is your first experience with death. And then you have to, like, forcefully rummage through the dead person's things.
Yeah.
Like, it would have some sort of effect
on you. Oh, for sure. And just as, like, a general side note to this crime,
because we're all curious.
Yeah. Mike was eventually found not guilty of the shooting due to reason of insanity, saying that he did not get proper psychological treatment after his time in the war, which is probably true. And he ended up spending 4 years in an insane asylum before being released. So he was back in Richard's life in no time at all, basically. Yeah.
And apparently, like, he was in contact with Richard throughout all the murders and everything. Yeah. So after this attack, Richard went to spend the summer with his older brother, Reuben, in L.A. While he was there, he saw all kinds of new things, like the ocean for the first time and porn shops.
He was so stoked about those porn shops, baby.
So he also joined his brother on a few burglaries and learned important skills.
Important skills. Yeah. They were important to him.
Yeah. Like how to open windows quietly and look out for dogs, alarms, and motion detectors.
Why is everyone in his life be like, hey, man, do you want to become a serial killer?
Right.
And then they're all just like, I don't know how he was a serial killer. Like,
you guys
all gave him the tools, each individually helped him along the way.
So later this year, he moves in with his older sister, Ruth, who they had such a good relationship as kids.
Yeah.
Ruth had gotten married to a man named Roberto in an attempt to get out of her father's home.
Yeah, like all of them.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Roberto was also not a great man.
Yeah.
He had a very high sex drive and would constantly pester and pressure Ruth into sleeping with him. And, like, she hoped that this would kind of ease over time, but as their marriage continued, it just didn't.
Yeah.
Roberto was also a terrible influence on Richard because he was an obsessive peeping Tom, and he began bringing Richard along with him when he did this. Keep in mind, Richard was 13 years old and in the ninth grade at this time.
Yeah.
Like, let's go look at, I'm hoping, adult women.
Like, yeah. And I'm pretty sure, like, this was almost a nightly routine for Roberto.
Mm-hmm. So, Ruth and Roberto split after 2 years of marriage because of his peeping and his influence on Richard.
Yeah.
And Ruth said of her brother during this time that he lived with her, "My brother never slept. He was up all night, all the time. He was one of those people who functioned with only a few hours of sleep. He'd watch television or he'd go out somewhere. He just never slept." Which I would die. Richard also began using LSD at this time, as Roberto was also a drug addict and also used the drug LSD, and he also began developing an interest in Satanism.
Yeah.
And it's believed that his interest in Satanism was sparked when he would sleep in the local cemetery to escape his violent father. It's called the Concordia, and it is often said to be haunted. There were local rumors that Satanists perform rituals within the cemetery.
Yeah, and I, like, saw a bunch of things online from people who, like, live in this area, and they're like, it's a very haunted, spooky Ooh. Cemetery. But I didn't want to just, like, put shit in from Reddit as, like, research, yeah. So I didn't do that.
So, a small note on Satanism for people who, you know, don't actually know what it is.
And also because Richard does not practice Satanism.
No.
And I think it's important to know that he does not practice Satanism. He uses the term Satanist to be scary and to freak people out.
Mm-hmm.
That is the only thing. It is only for shock value and to seem like a hard ass, truthfully.
Well, and it was like the middle of the 80s, which was prime time for satanic panic.
Yeah. And I've also been seeing things recently on Facebook say, like, sharing things where they're like, Satanists are sex traffickers, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, stop.
People infuriate me.
So I just want, I think we should talk about Satanism briefly, just because there's so many misconceptions around it.
Yeah. Satanism realistically began as a scare tactic by Christians during the Middle Ages. Anyone who is considered to be against the church was deemed a Satanist.
Yeah.
The actual Church of Satan was founded in 1966 and doesn't believe in the devil. They view Satan as a positive archetype who represents pride, individualism, and enlightenment, as a symbol of defiance against
Abrahamic
faiths. Scholars of Satanism state it has a history of being a designation made by people against those whom they dislike. And it's a term used for, like, othering.
Yeah, exactly.
most people who practice actual Satanism don't like murder babies and practice human sacrifice like the media would lead you to believe.
Yes. And I feel like that is still something that's being pushed by the media.
Oh, yeah. And like, we're not telling you to like go practice Satanism if you're not Christian. Yeah. But like, it is a very misunderstood religion and practice that like.
And a lot of serial killers use it as a way to make themselves seem scarier and give it even more of a bad rap.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So when his interest in Satanism deepened, Richard's relationship with his parents became strained, as they did not agree with this because they were Catholic, like we said earlier.
Makes sense.
Yeah. This is not for them. And I just want to show how deeply Catholic this family is. So here's a weird story about Julian, the father. Julian fought for custody of cousin Miguel's two boys after the mom had been shot, because their maternal grandmother wanted the boys. And Julian was like, no, they're not going to go live with her. It was a whole thing. So the maternal grandmother went to her local witch and had a curse placed on Julian. And he fell ill within a couple of days. And obviously, it's unknown if he was actually cursed or if it was a placebo because his belief in black magic was so strong.
So, like, she had to have told him that she placed a curse on him.
Yes, she did. So, he lost his appetite and began wasting away. He was eventually hospitalized. It got so serious. Wow. And several tests were done. All of them came back saying nothing was wrong, but he continued to worsen in condition. His wife went and got another local witch who came in and performed a ritual to remove the spell. And within an hour, Julian got up from the bed and acted completely normal.
It's God. It is God.
But it's a witch who moved the spell. So who do you believe in, witches or a god?
No, after the witch fixes them, they're going to burn her at the fucking stake, apparently.
Exactly. I'm just like so confused by this. But that was a super weird story to show how Catholic they are.
Okay.
There you go. I read it and I was like, what?
It's just so crazy we had to talk about
it. Yeah, that's like most of Richard's life. So when Richie was 15 and in high school, he worked at a local Holiday Inn, and he used this as a way to, like, really get his robbing skills up to par.
I mean, it's honestly not a bad idea. Yeah. Like, it's a good way to rob people.
And it's now horrified me that people are sneaking into my room while I'm sleeping in hotels.
Well, I mean, like, I feel like being the, like, the housekeeper or the, like, person who cleans the rooms and stuff, like, they have the most, like,
access.
Yeah, they could just, like, if you leave your laptop or whatever sitting out.
Right. Anyway, we're not talking about how they steal, because that's rude. We don't know if they'll steal.
I have never had anything stolen from a hotel.
Me either. So, he would use his pass key to sneak into guests' rooms while they were sleeping to rob them, which is just so fucking creepy.
Yes, that is creepy.
One evening, he was caught doing this thing, because a guest returned to his room, only to find Ramirez attempting to rape his wife after she had gotten out of the shower. He, like, would sneak into people's rooms and unlock their back door and then, like, come in through the back type thing. Like, he was just always fucking with these people. And this night, he decided he wanted to try and rape someone, and it didn't work out for him.
Bad choice.
Yeah. So when this man came back into the room and discovered this, he beat the crap out of Richard.
Thank God.
When Richard went to the hospital, he was treated for a concussion and was given another 30 stitches just to close a gash inside of his mouth.
Again, thank God.
His mother was called and came to the hospital. Richard told her that the wife had actually come on to him and that the husband had just walked in on it, and he was so mad that he beat him up. His
Again,
mother,
you're 15.
And people think Richard Ramirez is hot, which we will talk about later. But if you looked at him, with your eyes, if you really used your eyes, he's not hot.
I feel like if throughout his entire life, he like did really good things for his hair, skin, and mouth.
Yeah.
That he would have some attractive features. I don't think he'd be hot, but yeah. It would take a lifetime of keeping up with good hygiene to get there.
Which
me.
Is something he just did not participate in.
No.
So naturally, his mom didn't want to think that she had a rapist for a son. So she believed his story and they moved on from there. And unfortunately, the charges against Richard were eventually dropped as the couple was from out of town and they did not want to come back into town to testify at the trial. And this was actually super common during this time as rape was widely seen as like a shameful crime, which is really fucking sad. But people didn't want to like be known for the one who had been raped, essentially, mm-hmm. which if you watch I'll Be Gone in the Dark on HBO, they talk about a lot and it's so fucking sad.
Oh, I still haven't watched it
yet. I've only watched half of it, but you have to watch it. It's so
I have to use your HBO password.
Yeah, you already have it, I'm pretty sure. So after getting deeply into drugs, and now it's like mainly the LSD that we're focusing on, and by we I mean Richard, he dropped out of Jefferson High School in the ninth grade, and he was eventually arrested for the first time in 1977 for marijuana possession. Later in 77, his cousin Mike was also released from the mental hospital, and him and Richard immediately began hanging out again.
Why?
And just like when he was 12, his cousin regaled him with stories of Nam, but now Richard had deeper fantasies for what Mike was discussing and has already tried to act out on them.
Mm-hmm. So eventually, at the age of 18, Richard moved to California. First down to San Francisco and then settled in the Los Angeles County area. And he moved there because he was following a group of friends that he had made back in Texas, and they were on their way out to California. One of these people was a woman named Donna Myers. And she'll come up later again, but Donna said that when she first met Richard, she thought he was a nice guy. But, like, he would talk to her about Satan a lot.
Yeah.
But, like, they remained friends for a long time. She said that she would see him about once a month when he would go to their place in San Pablo to do his laundry. She also said that he would always carry around a backpack. He loved eating junk food, had gotten really good at stealing cars, and also he just never brushed his teeth.
Yeah.
And again, we'll learn he had real nasty teeth.
Yeah, bitch had halitosis for days.
You could smell it across the house.
Yeah, it was not good.
So upon moving to California, Richard developed a pretty strong cocaine addiction. His addiction began in 1978, and it became so bad that he actually started dissolving the cocaine in water and shooting it into his veins with a needle.
Which is some hardcore shit.
It is. It's terrifying. And it's terrifying because of this. One time...
Hold on. If you're squeamish, do not listen to this because it's awful. I read it and was like, wow, that is foul.
So one time, he even broke a needle in his arm and had to go to the hospital to get it cut out of his arm.
Yeah, it's not good. Not great at all.
It's gross. And I can't do needles at all.
Yeah.
So, to support this cocaine habit, he had to commit more and more robberies, enough to sustain a $1,200 to $1,500 a week habit.
Just on cocaine.
Yes.
No other bills.
Yeah.
By the way.
Which, I mean, during his first 3 years, he lived like on Skid Row and was couch surfing, living on the streets, this and that.
But like, you gotta eat.
Exactly.
Groceries and shit.
And also, while living in LA, he was living in the stolen cars.
Yeah.
He would steal a car for a few days, then abandon it and find another. So one evening in 1978, Richard met a brunette woman who was looking for some peeps for some PCP, aka angel dust. And unfortunately, this story was told by Richard. So, like, if it is true, we don't have a name for this woman that it's been connected to.
Yeah.
But Richard got her some PCP, and when he brought it back to her, they went up to her apartment to use it. Richard, you know, started to put the moves on her, but she said she was a lesbian and was not interested in him.
Yeah.
So eventually, they ran out of angel dust, and Richard left for the night, or so the woman thought. Instead, he went upstairs to the roof of her building and then snuck down the fire escape to her window, which he had previously unlocked while he was inside.
Yeah, just excused himself to go to the restroom, I'm sure, and then unlocked her window like a fucking horrible creep.
So he snuck into her room and raped her. And according to him, this was the first woman that he like fully attacked.
Yeah. And because I cannot help myself, we got to give you one more insane fact about Ramirez before we get into his actual murders.
I mean, let's be honest, his murders are just a series of insane facts.
They are, but like for some reason when I read this, I literally started going, what?
I mean, it's kind of cool, but it is fucking nuts.
It's so strange to me.
All right, have at it.
So the same week that Richard committed this first rape, he officially read the Satanic Bible by Anton LaVey. Crazy. This book captured Richard's imagination so much that he stole a car and drove to San Francisco just so he could meet LaVey. Wild.
Okay.
And the crazy thing is, he did. He says that he witnessed a ritual where LaVey did a ritual over a nude woman and then afterwards met him and treated him as if he were a holy figure to LaVey's face. Later on, LaVey would say about Richard, I thought Richard was very nice, very shy. I like him. Okay. And after this event, he actually immediately called his mother and begged her to pray for him because he had felt Satan in the room tonight.
So I feel like he's kind of a pussy because he wants to be this big Satanist guy.
Yeah, but he's also like, Mom.
Yeah, he's like, help me.
I've literally felt Satan and I think I'm going crazy. Yeah. But obviously, his mom praying for him didn't help. He went home and read LaVey's second book and dove further into this belief that Satan was telling him to commit these crimes. Just a wild thing. Sorry.
You're good. So he was arrested in 1981 and 1984 for auto theft. And according to the police, he had noticeably neglected his personal hygiene.
Which is gross if the cops can tell.
Right? So his family also saw him and thought that he looked terrible. He was really thin and unkempt. They wanted him to move back to El Paso, but instead he, you know, wanted to be his own person and, you know, start murdering people. So he stayed in LA.
Yeah. So from here on out, we will be discussing his crimes. And some of them can get pretty graphic. So just another reminder, if you don't want to hear it, don't listen.
Yeah.
All right, so the first murder he committed wasn't actually even known to be his first murder until 2009, when a sample of his DNA was matched to some DNA found at the crime scene. And he also actually never confessed to this crime, probably because of this fact. On April 10th, 1984, a 9-year-old girl named Mae Lung was murdered in the basement of the hotel where Richard was staying in San Francisco. The girl had been on her way home from school with her brother when the two kids argued about going up the stairs versus the elevator, which is just such a wholesome fucking kid argument.
So innocent.
And it's like, ugh. So her brother took the elevator and Mae took the stairs. But unfortunately, she never reached her mother's apartment. She was found half an hour later with her blouse wrapped around her neck. She had been raped and beaten before being stabbed to death. Her body was found hanging from a pipe in the basement. In 2016, officials stated that they found evidence of another suspect whose DNA was also at the scene, but they were never publicly identified due to the suspect being a minor at the time and was never charged due to a lack of evidence.
So, like, he could have had some sort of, like, inspiration or partner or something. Yeah. Like, who knows?
Who knows? It could have also just been, like, some unfortunate person who happened to be with him and just never said anything. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So, now we're going to go to the crimes that they knew about before 2009.
Yeah.
So, on June 27th, 1984, at 8:30 p.m., Richard bought 2 grams of cocaine from a drug dealer named Roberto at a local gas station. I feel like he has a lot of bad people named Roberto in his life.
Yeah, not great.
After taking some of the drugs, he began driving around listening to metal music like Judas Priest, AC/DC, Black Sabbath, and he started his hunt for some place to break into and rob. After driving around for a while, he found himself in front of a pink apartment building in Glassell Park in Los Angeles. Later that night, on June 28, 1984, he broke into the ground floor apartment belonging to Jenny Vinco. He got into the apartment by removing a mesh screen on an open window. Close your fucking windows, everyone. Lock your doors and close your windows.
Yeah. It's not Jenny's fault, but also be proactive.
Yes. He was wearing gloves at the time, but he actually removed one in order to get the screen out. He decided to break into the, like, front apartment because he didn't want to get stuck in the back of the complex in case something went wrong. And also, on these hunts where he tried to just rob people, he would avoid places with alarm systems and dogs, but, like, he felt like he could get around them if need be, just like his brother had taught him.
Yeah.
He would also dress in all black when he was out and about, including black shoes and socks and a black baseball cap. So, about Jenny Vinco. She was a 79-year-old woman. She had white hair, was 5'9", weighed 190 pounds. She was a weak and frail woman who also had a hard time walking.
Yeah.
So, Jenny had 2 sons. Jack and Manny. She had actually lived with her son Manny in Brooklyn, but Manny was described as having some mental problems, so her son Jack had actually recently moved her to Los Angeles to be close to him, and he lived in the apartment above hers, so yeah, he could be right there at any time.
Yeah, and what I heard is that, like, there was an incident where Manny, like, struck his mother. So his brother was like, nah, we're getting you out of there and you're going to come, like, stay with me instead.
Yeah. So after breaking into Jenny's house, Richard was pissed because he noticed how poverty ridden the apartment was, as he was technically there to rob the place. Then he found Jenny sleeping in her bed. And he was so angry about not being able to take many things from the apartment that he decided to attack her.
Yeah.
And he attacked her with a 6-inch hunting knife. This is kind of graphic. Before cutting her throat so deeply that she was almost decapitated. I also read in some places that he had raped her, in some places he had not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's conflicting. But after slitting her throat, he finished the attack by stabbing her 3 more times in the chest, just for good measure.
Mm-hmm.
Before leaving, he drank 3 glasses of water in the apartment and washed his hands in the sink. And it was also stated that some items from the apartment were missing, so he was able to take a few things.
Right.
And after this attack, while on his way home, he almost ran a stop sign in front of a police officer.
Yeah, he, like, told Philip Carlo, I think is the author of the book, that he, like, was getting ready to do so, but then just was, like, decided to stop, and a cop rolled up to the other stop sign, and he was like, I would have gotten pulled over that mm-hmm. night.
Yeah, so, like she said, he would have gotten pulled over if he hadn't have stopped, and the officer would have seen he was covered in blood, and that probably would have been the end to his killing spree.
Yeah, or at least some questions would have been asked.
Right.
Jenny was found by her son, who lived in the apartment above hers, the next day at 1:20 p.m. He was there to bring her chicken McNuggets for lunch, which were her favorite. And I thought that was really sweet.
It is. It's like really sad.
It is really sad. When he got to the apartment, he noticed that the screen was missing from the front window and that the front door was unlocked. And he obviously thought this was strange. When he entered, he discovered the window screen in the living room, and then he found his mother in her bed. He immediately called the police, and the police were able to pull a fingerprint off the screen that was removed from the window, but were unable to match them to anyone currently in their database. After killing Jenny, Richard's cocaine addiction got worse, which made him in turn have to commit more robberies. Sometimes committing up to 2 or 3 a day, which is just wild.
It is.
He was also described as a loner, often just hiding in his room to do drugs and listen to metal music. He would specifically listen to AC/DC's Highway to Hell album over and over again as a way to pump himself up. In February of 1985, in separate incidents, 2 young girls were abducted. A 6-year-old girl was stuffed into a laundry bag, molested, and dropped off in a nearby location. A 9-year-old girl was raped and left in the vicinity of her house. The next murder didn't happen for almost a year, but this is what started Richard's killing spree. On February 21st, 1985, 58-year-old Christina Caldwell and her sister, 70-year-old Mary Caldwell, were murdered in their home in Telegraph Hill. Both sisters were stabbed to death dozens of times, and one of the sisters was found near the window, with the knife sticking out of her throat.
On March 17th, 1985, Richard was driving around listening to the Highway to Hell album and spotted 22-year-old Maria Hernandez driving her gold Camaro. Maria was on her way home from having dinner with her boyfriend, and Richard followed her all the way to her house in Rosemead, Los Angeles, that she shared with a roommate.
Yeah.
Richard was unaware that Maria would have a roommate and that her car was always parked in the garage. So, after Maria parks her car, Richard also gets out of his car and starts walking towards her, and he ducks inside the garage behind her when she's closing the garage door. And Maria actually had to open 2 locks in order to get inside of her house, and she had unlocked the first one before Richard fired a .22 caliber handgun at her face.
Yeah.
And Maria must have heard Richard behind her or getting ready to shoot as she raised her hands to protect herself from the shot. And in the biggest stroke of luck in history.
Yeah.
This is insane. The bullet hit her hand and ricocheted off of her keys because she was holding them in her hand.
Yeah.
But Maria was also a fucking genius because she decided to just fall to the floor and play dead. And she was convincing enough that Richard just made his way inside of the house.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, inside the house was Maria's roommate, Dale Yoshi Okazaki, who had heard the gunshot. And Dale was just 2 weeks away from her 35th birthday. She had recently gotten a promotion at work and had worked hard to purchase this condo that they lived in.
Yeah.
When Richard walked in, he saw Dale duck behind the kitchen counter and then just stood there in complete silence, pointing his gun at her, knowing that she would have to come up sometime to see if he was still there.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, she did just that. And as soon as she popped up, Richard shot her in the forehead at close range, killing her instantly.
It's such a sad, like, dichotomy of this girl who just was saved by her keys. Mm-hmm. And then this girl who, like, just peeks her head over the counter to see if she's okay and gets killed instantly. It's fucking terrible.
It is. So while all this was happening inside, Maria got up from inside of the garage and ran down the alleyway to look for help. Richard had actually spotted her as he was leaving the scene, and he pointed his gun at her. And he decided against shooting her outside. And he got in his car and just left. While driving home, he realized that his AC/DC hat had fallen off during the commotion in the garage and that he had left it behind. So, after she knew her attacker was gone, Maria went back into the apartment where she discovered her roommate. She first called the cops and then her boyfriend. So the police came and started their investigation at the scene. Since there was no sign of robbery, the police's first assumption was that this was some sort of like love triangle gone wrong. Since Maria survived, she was able to give a description of the man who attacked her, and the first sketch was created. Once the sketch was completed, it was put on Detective Carrillo's desk. He took the sketch to the East LA station, where he ran into Deputy Rene Gilondo, who also did composite sketches. He said that the picture looked similar to a case of sexual assault that he had just had done a sketch for. And this helped the police as they started looking into other sex crimes committed by men wearing all black.
So behind the scenes, people were connecting the dots.
Yes.
The next attack occurred less than an hour after Richard had struck Maria in Dale's house. While driving away from the scene in Monterey Park, he passed a woman driving her car and decided to follow her, just as he did Maria. This woman was 30-year-old Cy Lin Yu, who went by Veronica. This time was different, though, because Veronica realized that she was being followed. So she pulled off onto the side of the road to see if the person would stop following her and just drive by, which is smart, yes. You know? Maybe not smart to like pull off on a dark road, but yeah. You know,
like,
do it in a,
like turn around, yeah, do a circle, see if they follow.
Do something.
You.
Richard just continued past her, and she got back onto the road, following him for a bit to see where he was going because she was just like, "Fuck you."
Yeah, she's ballsy.
Yeah. After like about a block down the road, they pulled up to a red light, and Richard noticed that Veronica was following him this time. So he got out of his car and started approaching her when she asked him, "Why are you following me?" Richard answered that he wasn't following her, just saying that he thought he knew her, to which she just argued back saying, "No, you were following me."
Like she held her ground. She yeah. was like, "No."
They went back and forth for a little while too. Mm-hmm. He again tried to justify himself saying he didn't know her. And Veronica then tried to start backing her car away, saying that she was going to call the police. Richard then tried pulling her out of her car, and Veronica started screaming. When he tried to get into the car with her and failed, he pulled out his gun and shot her in the side. She then tried to get out of the car to get away and was shot again. She was eventually able to get out of the car and fell to the ground, and Richard then fled the scene. What Richard didn't know is that a neighbor named George had just witnessed the whole thing. He called the police and rushed to Veronica's side. He was able to speak with her before she died and asked her if she knew the man, to which she said she did not. The police got to the scene while she was alive as well, but unfortunately, she quickly passed away and was pronounced dead once she arrived at the hospital. Veronica's death was originally thought to have been caused by some sort of scorned lover or ex-boyfriend, according to the police. This didn't fit the other crimes that Richard had done. After speaking to her family, they quickly ruled this option out, though. They also ruled out robbery as a motive, as nothing had been taken from her, and her wallet was just in plain sight, like in the middle console, and was left. So it appeared as though she had been randomly killed. The three attacks in a single day did cause some insane media coverage. They dubbed this man, who is described as the curly-haired attacker with bulging eyes and rotting teeth, the walk-in killer, and the valley intruder.
And he was also called, like, the screen door killer at one time, which is just stupid.
Yeah,
as fuck.
It's not, like, a clever name, you know?
Right? So, another man besides Detective Carrillo who started working on this case was Frank Salerno, a.k.a. the bulldog.
Yeah.
He also worked on the Hillside Strangler case, and he was very well known in law enforcement. Like, I feel like he's kind of a well-known name even nowadays.
Yeah.
And Frank Salerno actually developed a web of snitches that he worked with to help him close a lot of cases, and this actually helped him to become a sergeant.
Yeah. And something we haven't talked about yet before that I did want to mention is that one of the biggest pieces of research we used was a book by Philip Carlo, like, called The Night Stalker. And while it's very good, very detailed, my guy wrote in all of chapter 4 about Frank Salerno. And it's like, I don't need to know where Frank was born, what his mother liked to eat on Christmas and shit like that. I just want to know why he's important.
Oh, yeah, I feel that. Chapter 8 was all about a company picnic and why they held it and where they held it every year.
Yeah. Like, we got not only Richard's backstory, but both of his parents' backstory and why his parents were the way that they were. Yeah. It's just, it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's an in-depth novel if you ever want to read it.
So, on March 20th, a young girl who was 8 years old from Eagle Rock was kidnapped and sexually molested multiple times after a man broke into her family's home. And this was also eventually contributed to Richard Ramirez.
Yeah.
On March 26, 1985, Richard began driving around again, thinking about murder. He drove to Whittier, California, which is a city in LA County. And he drove here because the houses were, like, big and wealthy looking, and he had actually robbed a house here before, and some sources say that it was the same house that he was about to enter again. So at around 2 a.m. on March 27th, he turned off his headlights and pulled up in front of the house of Vincent and Maxine Zazara, and his was the only car parked on the street in the neighborhood. And this happens a lot. Like, I feel like it would stand out.
Yeah, that's what I always think is interesting.
So, Vincent was a 64-year-old retired CPA who owned two pizza shops. He was described by his family and friends as fun-loving and gregarious. His wife, Maxine, was a 44-year-old religious woman who was very involved with her local church, the Trinity Baptist Church. She sang in the church choir, and she actually did the accounting for the church for free.
Which is, like, very kind of you, because accounting isn't easy,
right?
And to just do it for free is very nice.
So when Richard approached the house, he looked in the window and saw Vincent asleep on the couch in front of the TV that was still on. When he peered into another window, he saw that Maxine was asleep in bed. He then climbed into a window that went into the couple's laundry room. When he got inside, Richard took off his shoes. He immediately went into the room where Vincent was sleeping and just shot him in the head. Vincent stood trying to stop the man, but then fell. Maxine was awakened by the gunshot, but Richard ran into the bedroom before she could get up to escape. He beat her and bound her hands together while demanding that Maxine tell him where the valuables were hidden. While Richard was ransacking the house, searching for valuables, Maxine remembered that there was a shotgun under the bed. Determined to get the gun, she was able to get her hands free and rolled off the bed. She grabbed the shotgun and aimed it at the intruder inside of her home. She pulled the trigger, and nothing happened.
Yeah.
The gun wasn't loaded. Vincent had taken the bullets out of their gun when their grandchildren had come to visit that weekend.
Yeah, which is 100% a great grandpa move, you know?
Yeah, like, that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, it just happened to be at a very inopportune time.
100%.
This is, like, the saddest story to me, because she could have ended the Night Stalker there, or at least stopped herself from being attacked, and it just, like, didn't happen.
Like, I just keep imagining, like, her pulling the trigger and then just like the feeling of your gut sinking.
Oh, yeah.
Like when nothing happens.
Your gut has never sunk like that before, yeah. You know?
It fell out of your butt.
Yeah.
So now Richard's infuriated. So he raised his .22 caliber gun and shot Maxine 3 times in the chest. And so this is when we have a little graphic moment.
Yeah, because this was like he was very angry during this murder.
Yes. So he then left the room and went into the kitchen where he grabbed a 10-inch carving knife. He then returned to the room and placed her body on the bed. Richard then mutilated her body by stabbing her several times, including cutting her face, pubic region, and stomach. He even tried to cut her heart out. But when he was unable to, he used the knife to carve an inverted cross onto her left breast.
Yeah.
He then gouged out her eyes and placed them in a jewelry box, which he kept as a souvenir. Richard then attempted to have sex with Maxine's corpse, but he was unable to perform, saying that he was shaken because the gun had been pointed at him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm pretty sure you were shaken because you just mutilated a woman.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to him, that's supposed to get him off.
That's true. So the autopsy thankfully determined that all of this mutilation stuff happened to her body after she had died.
Yeah, so which is, I just think, a nice little bit, yes, of peace, personally, that I'd like to add in. Mm-hmm.
So before leaving the house, Richard took everything that he could of value. He took the TV, VCR, jewelry, money, etc. He placed it all in a pillowcase. And then he also stole the shotgun that Maxine had tried to use to protect herself.
Because he's an asshole.
Yeah. What he didn't know, though, is that he missed a safe that contained a rare coin collection that was worth, like, a ton of fucking money.
Yeah. While Richard was fleeing the scene, a cop actually pulled up behind him yet again, but did not pull him over. Richard said that he believes this cop didn't pull him over because before he went out that night, he had placed a bumper sticker on his car that said, America, love it or leave it. And he said that the cops were patriotic and that this bumper sticker is what saved him that night.
I mean, I believe
him. I do too, honestly.
He's not wrong.
After committing the murder, he went back to the place where he was staying, and that was the infamous Cecil Hotel. And here he cleaned himself off. Once all of the blood was off of him, he went out again, this time in search of a sex worker. After he picked one up, he was unable to perform sexually again. So instead, he just asked if he could play with her feet.
We learn he has a foot fetish.
Yeah. After he was done, he paid the sex worker and dropped her off where he found her. No harm done, and he didn't return home until around 6 a.m. that morning because he was just driving around listening to AC/DC or something weird.
Doing his thing.
Back at the house of Vincent and Maxine, a worker from Vincent's Pizza Shops, Francisco Polo, stopped by the house at around 8:45 that evening to drop off pizza receipts, and this was something that he normally did. When he arrived, he noticed that the front door was half opened and that the screen door was unlocked, which was very unusual. He called out to Vincent, and when he didn't hear a response, he put the envelopes with the receipts in the mail slot and left.
I mean, like, I try and think about it and I'm like, would I have left or yeah. would I have gone in the house?
I don't know what I would have done either, truthfully. Like, I want to be like, Francisco, what are you doing, my guy? But I'll say that later when he's actually being fucking stupid.
Yeah.
So Francisco had a bad feeling about this, so he decided to return to the home the next morning. When he got to the house, he saw that the door was still open and nothing had changed. So he realized that something was wrong. But he didn't want to go inside of the house alone, afraid that he would go inside and something would be wrong.
Yeah, he didn't want to, like, be the witness to something.
Basically, yeah. So he decided to drive the 20 minutes to the pizza shop and grab a coworker. Because remember, there are no cell phones. you could have maybe gone to a neighbor and asked to use their phone, but he did this instead.
He had anxiety like yes. me and could not do that.
The coworker, Al, drove his own car to the house following Francisco. But on his way there, he got stuck at a red light, meaning Francisco got to the house first. So, after all of this,
Francisco
decided he's not going to wait for Al to show up, and he steps into the house by himself.
Keep in mind, Al's maybe 5 minutes behind him. Like,
yeah, he hit a red light, my yeah. guy. Like, he's not an hour behind you. When he entered the living room, he saw Vincent lying on the floor with blood coming out of his ears. Francisco immediately ran out of the house and started driving away.
Just got in his car and started driving.
Yeah. He realized that there was nothing else he could do, so he turned back around and waited for his coworker to get to the house. When Al got there, he didn't believe what Francisco told him was inside, so he went inside himself to check. After he realized that Francisco was telling the truth, the two still didn't call the cops. Instead, they call Vincent and Maxine's son, Peter. Peter's like, why the fuck haven't you called the cops? And calls the cops himself to report his parents' murder.
Yeah, like, you can call the son, but call 911 first, because what if one of them is still alive?
Yes. Multitude of reasons to not call the son first out of anybody.
Right.
So after 911 was called, the police were not the first to show up. There was a mix-up, and the fire station shows up, who's like, what? We can't handle this. Like, yeah, we're this here to fight a fire. This is the wrong ambulance. Like, we didn't bring the ambulance. We brought the fire truck.
And, like, this is not the only time this happened.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. When the police finally showed up, the only evidence they could really find was a shoe print from a size 11 and a half Avia sneaker in the flower bed under the window, which the police photographed and then made a casting of. They also found the bullets of the .22 caliber gun that had been used. And Detective Carrillo began linking these crimes together, thinking that they had a serial killer on their hands, but no one really believed him. He even said that some of his colleagues like were laughing at him for saying this, because he was like, I think this shit's happening everywhere, guys.
Yeah, like, he's thinking about it, but coming from like the mind of his colleagues, they're yeah. like, well, the first person was stabbed and had their throat slit, and then this is now a couple.
Yeah.
And like, they none were of it shot. Matches up. Like, yeah, it's different like people, different ages, different sexes, different right. weapons. Like, it's all different MOs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, guys. That has been a bit of a longer one.
Yeah, and our first part of Richard Ramirez.
Yes, we hope that you guys liked it.
Yes, and we hope you'll come back for the second part. There will probably be a third part as well.
Yes, there will likely be three parts. Second part is going to be wild and crazy, though. Don't miss it, because
yeah, that's
going to
be like the rest of the murders yeah. and him being caught.
Yeah, so you don't want to miss out on that.
Remember to check us out on social media. We're at Crime Binge on Twitter and Crime Binge Podcast on Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah.
You can check out our website, which again is just crimebinge.com, where you can send us your submissions of listener stories or suggestions of cases you want to hear. And if you don't want to head to the website, you can always email us. That's crimebinge@gmail.com.
Yeah. And if you loved this episode, make sure to leave us a 5-star review. You can leave a comment about why you hate Richard Ramirez this week. All right, guys, we will see you next week for part 2 of Richard Ramirez. And keep on binging. Bye.
See ya. Wow, it feels so good to say that again.
It does.